This is HNN.
Good evening. This is HNN. The Hall Table News Network is your not even remotely close to around the clock Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes news, reactions, reviews, theory crafting, and more source. I am Celia Xera, one of your hosts. And as always, I am joined by my distinguished co-host, distinguished speaker co-host, King Biko.
Thank you, Biko. Good. How are you? So we are going to start something new with the podcast. We're going to be sending out surveys at the end of this on a scale of 1 to 5. Please let us know how you thought your speakers were doing on the overall content. Just please keep in mind, we can't control the temperature of the room that you're in, so they don't have that reflect the score, because it actually does reflect your score. But I'm doing great. I'd also love to say a huge thank you to CG for bringing the schedule back to our schedule.
Yes.
We're excited. We've got a new kit that's hot off the presses, not a week off the presses. But no, I'm doing great. So
nice.
Yeah,
they finally turned it around. They listened to us.
Yes.
So like you said, we have a new kit. We have two new kits.
And a road ahead. There's a lot.
This is a big one.
Do you pack a lunch? Because I think we're gonna need it.
I know. I was like, I came down. My husband's like, "How long do you think you would be?" I'm like,
"Till the sun comes up." So
like, you probably don't want me to answer that question. Okay. I think we should probably should we just start with the road ahead?
Let's start with the road ahead. Yeah, because I think that's kind of the big thing. And well, actually, technically, there are three kits, because the Leviathan kit is actually buried in the road ahead as well.
I forgot that it's in there. I remember seeing that, by the way, that they put it in there, and I was like, why would you do that? People will not know that it's there, and I clearly have already forgotten.
So to let the listeners in behind the curtain, you know, we've been complaining over the past couple of weeks because the schedule rotated off of our recording schedule. Mm-hmm. And then I messaged Sarah, I think it was on Sunday, going, are you as miserable than I am right now that we've been wanting to get the schedule back? And now all of a sudden it's like, how are we going to get through all of this stuff on the next episode? So this is a case of be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, clearly. Oh, man. Okay, so real quick, Road Ahead talks about Leviathan with the kit, talks about confirmed galactic legend Leia, which we've all been speculating about. Two new characters.
Correct. Yep.
I guess technically three. Well, two new characters specifically in the road ahead. And then a new raid. Yikes.
A hotly debated topic in the community. The new raid.
Yeah. Okay. I guess we'll just go top to bottom. So the Leviathan is coming. Apparently, supposedly, July 19th, which is Wednesday.
That is Wednesday.
Now, I don't know if you saw this or not, but the assets for Leviathan have not been loaded into the game as of yet. So we'll see, I guess.
So I know that there's been, I was reading some comments and people are confused that because CG's not exactly sure. I very much remember the Profundity event because I was coming back from Las Vegas, and Profundity released on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday at like 2 p.m. on the typical marquee spot is when it went active. So it was not active as soon as it hit the game. There was essentially, you know, what, 18 hours later, kind of whenever they do it. It's like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time when new characters release. And I remember that because I was originally supposed to land on my return flight and be able to do it that afternoon. And I ended up having to do it on an airplane for 3 hours because of flight delays.
Right. I remember you telling me that.
Yeah. So, you know, I know that there's people like, is it the 19th or the 20th, or when does it come in? I'm expecting it to be Thursday. It'll be active Thursday at 2 p.m. for 24 hours. Like that's kind of the way that I'm expecting it to be. So,
yeah. And I mean, their exact words were they expect it to release on the 19th. It doesn't necessarily mean the event will happen in true true CG fashion.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
Do you want to read the kit? Do you want me to read
the kit? I'll tell you what, I can start and then we'll kind of trade between all of the other kits that we need to get through tonight. So
yeah.
Now, interesting, we don't have images. We don't have the cool kind of, you know, placeholder card or any of that stuff. But the Leviathan kit, the basic apocalyptic fulsade, is it fulsade? Fulsade?
I have no idea.
Apocalyptic basic is what we're going to call it for the rest of tonight. So, yeah. Final text. Deal special damage to target enemy and inflict shock for 2 turns. Then all Sith allies gain 1 stack of ferocity for 2 turns. If target enemy already had shock, inflict doubt for 2 turns on 2 random enemies who don't have it. If Seize the Bridge has been used in this encounter, dispel all buffs on the target enemy and inflict fear for 1 turn, which can't be dispelled or resisted. So there's a lot going on in the basic.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I think probably, and again, if you haven't been through the kit, again, this last time we'll probably do this for a while, but where have you been for the past week? But I think it's probably important to note that thematically, what this capital ship is doing is actually taking control of your ship. They're trying to take over the enemy capital ship is what they're doing. So when we talk about Seize the Bridge, some of these things are going to kind of be tied into that concept of kind of how it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a basic fear, doubt, and shock, kind of the staples of what we do with the Sith these days.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Sabotage, or special one is Sabotage the Hangars. Requires the player to inflict 15 debuffs, and it's a one-time use.
Okay, interesting.
So final text, limit 1 use per battle. Sith allies gain critical hit immunity and 5 stacks of ferocity for 2 turns. And target ally recovers 40% health. Increase the cooldown of column reinforcements by 1 on the enemy capital ship if they're light side. And inflict capital ship sabotaged on all enemies until the end of the encounter. Next enemy reinforcement or Seize the Bridge is used.
Okay, got it.
So single special. That's we're only using this one once. And then there's a note. Part of this is capital ship sabotaged. The next allied ship called to reinforce is immediately destroyed upon deployment.
Which is just insane.
And this ability can't be used unless other allied Sith ship inflicts 15 debuffs. Now, what's interesting is we now finally have a use for the Sith fighter.
Right.
He's going to be the last ship in your lineup, and he's going to be the first one you call in a mirror match so that he's blown up because he's worthless.
Fantastic. So
that's where he's going to come into play, maybe. Sabotage the Engines. Final text, this is special two, final text. Limit 1 use per battle. Reduce the enemy capital ship speed by 30% for the rest of the encounter and remove 30% turn meter, which can't be resisted. Sith allies gain critical hit immunity and 5 stacks of ferocity for 2 turns. And the target Sith ally gains breach immunity for 3 turns.
Okay.
So again, 1 use. And this is kind of becoming interesting is that what it's special one and special two, you can only use it once. So that kind of also is why that basic has so much in it probably.
Yeah.
Because you're probably going to use the basic a lot is part of that. So, but again, a lot of ferocity, a lot of debuffs out on the board.
And this one too, the second special isn't tied to, you know, needing to have debuffs or anything like that done. So you don't want to just like trigger finger it.
Yeah. Now this is, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, whether special two or special one comes up first, like whether you're, you know, on the first, your first turn, whether you can get special one off. If I have to lead with special two, it's going to drive me nuts because if the ability I should lead with should be all the way over to the left, not skip an ability to go to the right. That's just that's a Pico quirk in life. So, all right. So that is special two. So far we're going to blow up the first reinforcement. We're going to slow down the capital ship. And then special three, seize the bridge, can only be used if both special one and special two was used. One time use, 5-turn cooldown.
Okay. So you got to use both of them.
Yep.
5 turns, and you have to wait 5 turns.
Okay. So, all right. So that's, is that how you read that?
Oh, I guess. Well, does it start on cooldown?
Yeah. This is where it's, because if you have to wait 5 turns, that would be a 7-turn battle for your capital ship.
Well, no, I'm thinking like it starts at 5.
Okay.
Right away.
Okay. Yep. Got it.
So like the earliest you could use it would be the 5th turn.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I the way I was looking at it was after 1 and 2 were used, five more turns after that. Because I don't like the way that CG phrases these things.
Me neither.
I read this as special 1 and 2 were used. It's a one-time use, but it also has a 5-turn cooldown, which implies that you get another turn coming about it out of it. Like maybe we say starts on a 5-turn cooldown or, final text, limit 1 use per battle, take control of the enemy capital ship and reset its cooldowns.
So sorry, limit 1 use per battle. So why does the cooldown even, you have to, it has to start on cooldown. It has to start at 5.
That's gotta be what it is, because otherwise you'd be using this potentially on your 3rd turn.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Now also what's interesting is they call this special 3, but there is technically not an ultimate on this ship.
So is this kind of the ultimate?
It's the way that I look at it. Cause I think when we read this, we're going to realize it's kind of bonkers.
Okay.
So limit 1 use per battle. Take control of the enemy capital ship, reset its cooldowns, and grant it a bonus turn. While controlled, you can't use call reinforcement, and the cooldown of the ultimate ability is set to max at the start of each turn. Allies recover 50% health and have their cooldowns reset, and all enemies are inflicted with fear for 1 turn, which can't be evaded, dispelled, or resisted. This ability starts on cooldown. Ah, there it is. The first time Sith allies are inflicted with 50 debuffs, reduce the cooldown by 1.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so because of all the ferocity that's going out,
yes, okay.
You have the potential to bring this down into turn 3 or to turn 4.
Okay.
So the way I read this, let's say you're going against the Profundity, right? Mm-hmm. And you get to special 3, you run Seize the Bridge. All the cooldowns are reset.
Yeah.
And then you use the first special where you call an assist off of the Profundity. You target one of your ships and it targets one of the enemy ships. And then you just start doing damage to them from that side.
Man. Yikes.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Or you're fighting the Executor and you use the mass call assist.
And you mass call assist. It's like your own ship is attacking yourself.
Yeah, yes. Exactly that. Yeah.
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 Man, that is going to be really cool to see in game.
And also, you've feared the entire team as well. So they're all gone at this point.
Man.
And again, can't be used unless destroy the engines and sabotage the hangars were used in the same encounter. And then the crew ability, Wrath of the Sith, final text, Sith allies gain 15% max health. Sith ships gain critical hit immunity for 1 turn, 1 stack of ferocity, 1 stack of we have returned for 2 turns, and Sith Empire ships gain an additional stack of we have returned. Whenever an enemy is summoned, reduce their max health by 50% until the end of the encounter. Enemies attacking out of turn deal 50% less critical damage to attacker Sith allies.
Nice.
That helps maybe keep that Sith fighter alive a little bit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever an enemy's debuff expires, a random Sith ship gains 1 stack of ferocity for 2 turns, limit once per turn. The Mark 6 Interceptor gains an additional 10 stacks of Devouring Swarm when starting its first turn after deployed.
Okay.
That gets it to 40 on reinforcement.
Yeah.
Yep. So that was kind of the hook that we were waiting for in the Mark 6.
Yeah. And that kind of just tells you right away you don't want to reinforce it.
And whenever an enemy reinforces, inflict daze on all enemies for one turn. Sith ships are immune to max health reduction. Reinforcement bonus. Reinforced Sith ships attacks can't be evaded. They gain 5 stacks of ferocity and they ignore taunt effects until the end of the turn and stun target enemy for one turn, which can't be resisted when deployed.
Ooh.
So the Mark 6 gets to take out whatever the hell it wants to.
Yep.
And it's over then. It's.
That is fantastic.
It's an interesting kit. Like I like the idea that the specials are only all going to be used once, and then you kind of get to do some crazy bonker stuff. I don't see anything else beating this.
Yeah. And this reads to me like, because we saw with Executor and Profundity that they were both, you didn't really need to rush to 7-star. You want to get them to 7-star, but you didn't need to rush to it, and they held their own. And this definitely reads like, if you get it at 5 stars, you're good. If you get it at 6, you're good. Like, you're going to want it at 7 stars, because I'm curious if this makes the fleet missions in territory battles doable.
I think it has to, just because of the days on reinforcements. Now, I forget, but is there a star cap, or is there a star minimum for getting the crew level on capital ships?
I don't think so. And man, someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure the only limit with the... Oh, you need 5 stars to get the reinforcement, I think, fully unlocked.
So, but there's not a reinforcement on the ship or on the capital
right.
ship.
So I don't think there's a limit. I know there's a limit in how many reinforcements you can have.
Yep.
But I don't think there is a limit.
And the thought here is, I would think that you want to at least get this far enough along that you get the 10 additional stacks of Devouring Swarm
right
after the first turn. Like, to me, that's really the difference. Like, there's a lot of other cool stuff in that kit. Like, if you can blow up their first ship on reinforcement, that's cool. But being able to be first to the punch, get your ship out the door, and get that first one down, it makes sense. This also, though, sounds like mirror matches are going to be a coin flip, and then you. So
it really does sound like if it doesn't go your way, just exit the fight.
Now, what's interesting though is so speeds are all equal across the board. All right, you win the coin flip for getting to the hangar sabotage.
Okay.
But if you lose the coin flip for first reinforcement, it doesn't matter, because they're gonna they can't bring in the Mark 6 at that point.
Okay.
Like, it's probably gonna be a rush to get to sabotage the hangars to delay when the Mark 6 gets to come onto the board.
Yeah.
But It'll be interesting to see if people start rushing these kits up to R9 just for the extra 1 or 2 points of speed. Because I think we're going to see this for another year of mirror matches.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, because I don't think we get another capital ship before next summer.
I don't think so either.
Like, that seems to be their cadence so far.
Yep.
Man. Yeah, I have all the requirements done.
Okay.
And I have 7,500-ish crystals. So I could go to 5 stars right away.
Okay.
If I don't buy a... But
we should also point out that you have a Patreon account if anyone would like to help see Sarah reach 6 stars.
Oh man, if I don't Bible to go to 5 stars, I'm curious how well. I feel like it's gonna do really well though.
Yeah,
so
okay. You're all set, you're ready to roll for the event next week.
Yeah,
okay, now we're going to transition to the next galactic legend.
Yeah.
Would you burn all your crystals for the Leviathan knowing that there's a galactic legend coming, or does that put you maybe to decide maybe to pause a little bit?
I think it would be fine because I don't expect Leia before September at the earliest, absolute earliest. And the ship is just going to feed back into my crystal payouts anyway.
Fair enough.
I have a pretty good fleet shard. It's been pretty quiet, but even now, there's some like stragglers that are floating their way up into the top 10. And I'm like, I looked at it earlier. I'm like, who are you and why are you here?
It's time for new capital ship when you show up in my part of the neighborhood. So yeah,
like you need to leave. So, yeah, I think I would. And then also, like, the Leviathan, assuming it is exactly like Profundity and Executor, it's going to come around once a month.
Yep.
Whereas Leia's going to be there all day, every day.
Yeah.
So, it seems okay to do that. So, I think I would.
Okay. All right. With that, do we want to talk about Leia?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they've actually confirmed her. They did say, and I quote, "We are a little ways out from releasing Leia. We wanted to give you a quick rundown of the character." So they did not release like her kit or anything. They released part of her basic. Literally like two lines of her basic, which sounds pretty straightforward. It sounds like she's going to be a rebel. Geo.
Yes.
Which is fine. They did release the first part of her part one of her requirements. So we need Captain Rex, which I think we've all kind of were speculating with his release. Captain Rex at Relic 7.
Okay.
Princess Nissa, who is a new character coming at Relic 7. New Marquee coming out tomorrow, actually.
Yep.
Wicket Relic 3. Lando, like original Lando, Relic 5, and Admiral Ackbar, Relic 3.
Which I get Ackbar because he's a Return of the Jedi character. I don't get. Yes, Lando was in Return of the Jedi, but he also had a much cooler cape and a brown shirt as opposed to a blue shirt and a boring cape. Like that's the the difference between the two Landos. But I don't think anyone was surprised by this, although I'm very happy that it's who's coming in. They did release an image today, she is clearly in the camouflage poncho in that. So I don't know. I'm excited. I think there's, you know, we could play the character speculation game of who's going to come. In the other piece that they announced about her. Is we are getting, there will be a third marquee character, which is going to be a CG created, essentially rebel commando from Endor. Right. And I think his name, I want to say it's Dagan, but that's not
correct. It's, I keep wanting to call him Drogo from. It's not. It's, where is it? Drogon.
Drogon, yeah. So basically we have Khaleesi and Drago. That's really who the two characters are that for that. I know there's a lot of people kind of bent out of shape about what that character is. Because it was something that CG created.
Yeah.
Honestly, I like the fact that they put a name on the character instead of Hoth Rebel Scout, Hoth Rebel Soldier. They could have done Endor Rebel Scout, you know, type thing from that side. I think what I was really hoping for was a team of camouflage colored rebels in the mission. Like that's what I really wanted to see. So the fact that we got at least one of them is cool for me from that side. I really don't think it's a big deal that they put a name on it. You know, they could have just right. Like generic MOOC 01 and it would have accomplished the same thing from that side. So
right. That makes sense.
But
yeah.
Yeah. We'll see where it comes in. I know that again, Relic 7 is a lot for maybe a couple of new characters. Mm-hmm. I think the crate raid offsets that a little bit because, you know, I think most people are seeing even farming signal data, if you're burning resources from the crate raid for relics, you can pretty much go 3 to 7 in about 4 days. Or I'm sorry, 5 to 7 in about 4 days. So it's not that rough. It's signal data and generating the crystals for signal data that's going to be the bigger challenge on that side. So
yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like I'm sitting and I have signal data issues right now.
Yeah.
Trying to relic characters. Like I've got to get them to relic 7. And I'm like, we have 17 green signal data. Everything's fine over here. Yeah. But the other half of her is so that this is the header: Galactic Legend Leia event and Return of the Jedi raid. So there's a new raid coming. They don't anticipate this coming out before, I believe they said, the end of the year.
Yep.
Something like that. So we have theoretically another 5-6 months of crate. This does sound like it's going to be extremely different though than what we're used to. So it is 40th anniversary, like that's where they're coming from. And it sounds like it's like a speeder bike situation. Is that right? And you can only take in 3 characters at a time.
Yeah. And all of the characters are going to have their abilities wiped and you're essentially going to get raid specific abilities for everyone, which again, I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah. So they do say, there's specific characters. So same thing as crate. All of their abilities are changed for the raid.
Yep.
There are 8 new abilities, a unique basic shared by all of the characters, and 7 special abilities that characters will get 1 or 2 of based on their current abilities in their kits.
Yep.
So it's probably going to be something like, if you daze, you do this instead, or like whatever, something along those lines. And so that they did release currently who they're planning on letting you use in the raid. And it doesn't look that bad in terms of requirements. Either. You've got Admiral Akbar, which most of us, he's a Galactic Legend Leia requirement now. So there's that. But like C-3PO, Chewie, Han, Jedi Knight Luke, like you got a whole bunch of Imperial troopers on there. Honestly, I feel like the worst ones on here is like Ewok Scout.
Yeah.
Like there's some random Ewok. There's a bunch of Ewoks on here. But realistically, I mean, Hera's on here, but she's a requirement. Wedge is on here. He's a requirement. Like a lot of these characters that are listed are already requirements.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem too bad. I did notice that Galactic Legend Leia isn't on this list, and they did say that she would be there for the raid. So this obviously isn't a finalized list.
So I have a couple of thoughts on this. And one, and I think we're going to talk about this in a little bit coming up, but I will fully acknowledge that there's a view that maybe this came a little bit too quickly.
The raid?
The new raid came a little too quickly. We'll talk about that in a second. I do like the idea that we get an event tied to a galactic legend, because that's what we really got with crate, although crate was a little later than Jabba. Mm-hmm. Although we're probably going to see a little less of that window on the other side of it. I don't think the requirements are that bad, and I am going to probably. So I think the big question right now is, what do you do about the crate rate? Do you stop building teams?
Yeah.
I think a lot of that comes down to where your guild is, and as long as you're at the 130 box or maybe the 265 box, you stop. But I also think that people should probably start taking a look at this list and figuring out which characters make sense for immediate impact right now to start taking to R7. So that when the raid comes out, you can quickly move to R8 because we know the scores will be based off of R8. Like, I think you should be pre-farming for the raid right now. That's the way that I look at this.
Right.
Just take, like, using an example, the CLS characters and maybe the trooper teams are two that if you brought them to R7, you'd have payoffs in other game modes right now.
Yes, exactly.
And you're starting to get ahead of where it comes rather than kind of wait until November when it drops. And now all of a sudden we're racing to get characters up to where they need to be. I just think the faster you can get your roster kind of up into relics, I think you're in a better place. Or even if it's to R5 to give you flexibility to kind of pop up a couple of levels in that point. But I think if you're done with your crate farms, you should probably look at getting teams ready now because you have so long to get there.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. We literally, before this road ahead dropped, we were talking about in the officer chat about pushing for the 416 box and crate. And we were like, oh, we'll probably do it in the fall, like have everyone get Leviathan, get settled, recoup, have like summer, and then push in the fall. And like we were fully expecting, I think a lot of us were expecting a Galactic Legend Leia announcement in the road ahead.
Yep.
And we're like, yeah, we'll just see what they say in the road ahead kind of thing. And then they said this. We're like, all right, let's scrap all of that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's no point really for us to push for it because we're just going to switch rates.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that maybe is where some of the concern is in terms of the raid a new raid coming already. That there isn't a lot of incentive for people to build their roster. Like I'll use myself as an example. I just finished the Leviathan requirements.
Yep.
I spent money to get Jedi Cal, which was fine. And
that's why we work.
Yeah, it's fine. Everything's fine. So I have Jedi Cal now, but I finished the Lord Vader thing. So I was like, okay, I'm caught up on GLs. I've got Jedi Cal. I'm ready for Leviathan. I'm good. I'm going to go now and put relics into my Mando's team because I was doing the Relic 5 tier, which spoiler alert, I'm actually doing the Relic 3 tier because it's way easier to do Relic 3 with them at Relic 5. Anyway, so I was doing that tier and I was like, I'll just take them to Relic 7 because then that'll boost that and take Jabba up to Relic 8 and I'll be good. Yeah. And then they announced this and I was like, well, I guess I'm not doing my Mandos.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I'm in a position where it's fine for me not to do it because we're hitting that box and everything's good. If you're in a guild where you're not and you do need to invest in that, it kind of stings a little bit to put gear into them knowing that they're not going to be used.
But how many people can get to like the 130 or the 265 box if guilds just all 50 people get a Java team to do the final tier?
Right.
And then just fill in where they're at.
To do the 2.7 tier.
Yep. Yeah. And the point of that is a Java team at R8 is massively valuable twice a month. In Rise of the Empire, it's massively valuable in PvP. Like, you can make an argument that even without the raid, a Jabba team at R8 is a sound use of resources in the game.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, if you have a guild of 50 Jabbas at R8, you're getting the 130 box.
Yep.
Everything else that you throw at the raid is gravy from then on.
Yeah, 100%. You know, there's a thread running that this isn't respecting people's investments that they've made in the crate. And I will tell you, I disagree with that 100%. If they release the raid tomorrow, yeah, I can see that argument. Mm-hmm. But I think people are forgetting you're going to get another 4 or 5 months out of these characters. And that's 4 or 5 months of resources that you are going to pull out of this. And you are, over the next 4 or 5 months, everyone, and that's unless you went from gear 12 to R8 to get you the 9 million box, mm-hmm. you're going to make up all of those resources you spent, you are going to make up over the next 4 months of that investment that you made from that standpoint. But and this is why planning matters. This is why planning matters in Conquest. This is why planning matters for characters as they're released. But if you can start selectively moving characters ahead to be ready for the next raid, that just means you're going to be able to maximize what you're going to pull out of that raid if they run it for the next 12 months or if they tie it to the next Galactic Legend where it comes from that side. So mm-hmm. This is a case I think people need to start looking at where the puck's going, to use a hockey reference, instead mm-hmm. of kind of where we're at right now. That was for all of our Canadian friends. That's on. So, do you think that we're going to get a rotation with the crate raid, or do you think it's going to be the new raid all the time?
No. I mean, the only, and they can change it. Like CG can do as they please. But when they first announced the raid back in February that the new raid was coming, they specifically said that what they wanted to do was put all of the raids on a linear track. So the idea is you progress once your guild has maxed that raid, you progress to the next one, etc. So crate was at the top of that. So now this Return of the Jedi raid is going to be the new top. It's going to be the new king. And they also specifically said that the current, so it's the Mark III raid currency, would be exclusive to the feature raid, which means they're going to move. I don't see them introducing a new currency because that's going to be...
You see them downshifting the currency?
I see them downshifting it. I see crate going down the line. They move the personal track off of crate. It gets attached to Return of the Jedi with the Mark III currency, and crate just goes into the same play box as all the other raids.
You get a little bit of Mark III by doing crate, but because the personal rewards are weighted towards the new raid, that's how you drag people to the new raid. That's interesting.
That's what I would do. Yep. Based off of what they said. And again, they can change that. They can do as they please. Maybe we do get a Mark IV. God forbid, because that store is awful to navigate. Yeah. It's like so bad.
So, all right, let me ask you a question about that. What's a better solution? Minimizing the number of currency and how that works, or would it be better if we had a store per currency?
It would be better if, and I know somebody has suggested this to Meathead, I don't know how far it, down the line it's gone or whatever, if you could click on the current, like go to the raid store and then click on the currency to see what is for sale with that specific currency. So it's kind of like you're filtering. That would be better, especially if you are going to introduce a new currency.
So what's interesting, let's talk UI design for a moment. If you look at kind of fundamentally where user interfaces are going these days, is I have a navigation pane down the left-hand side, which is what we have today, right? Because that's how I get the left-hand side of the shop is how I get to my individual store components, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then within each one of the categories, you would have tabs across the top for subcategories of what we would look at. So it's kind of ultimately what you're talking about there is maybe it's not you click the raid currency, but I've got a tab for general currency, one for Mark I, one for Mark II, one for Mark III. And it almost feels like they're missing that piece of it, you know, like that again. And there's a whole UI talk to user interface people and kind of how they interact with people. It's massively interesting from that side, but We'll keep this on Star Wars for a little bit, but yeah, I just think that they need to have a way to filter that down. And it, but again, in the CG world, when you click on a currency, it says like they assume you want to go get more of it.
Right.
So yeah, I think they need to do something along those lines. But yeah, man, I hope we don't get more than four.
No, I hope not. I can I just see them just kind of lifting it and moving it to the
upgrade. Yeah. Okay.
And I think that is what would entice you to always play the new raid, is that you want that currency. So you're always gonna be going after the next thing.
So now, as for the raid itself, mm-hmm. so in the Pico Burrito world of Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Ahsoka Tano telling Darth Vader, "I am no Jedi,"
yeah,
is 1A.
Mm-hmm.
1B, maybe we'll call it 1E, maybe a little bit beneath that. Speeder bike race on Endor was the coolest thing in the world to like the 10-year-old version of me. That was, I love that. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah.
I would kill to have a speeder bike. So yeah, I'm excited from that standpoint.
All right. Awesome. I'm glad. But I mean, I think what they've said about it sounds really cool. Like it sounds like it's going to be completely different from anything that we've done. I truly hope that it takes until the end of the year. I think that would just be some nice breathing room.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to ask.
But just be ready. They're going to release it like the day before they go on Christmas vacation.
Oh yeah.
There's going to be a bug and we're going to complain about it for 3 weeks because it's not being addressed.
My pitchfork is ready to go.
Mine's in the shop, but yeah. You know, they said they're backlog, but I got plenty of time to get it back from that side. So
that's okay. You got months. Okay. Yeah. And then, like you said, they briefly mentioned this Drogon rebel captain. Yep. They do say that he's going to be part of the Leia squad. And that's it. They talk about Princess Nissa, but they've released her kit. Yep. They've released another kit, and that's it for the road ahead.
I'm also super interested on what her team is going to be, because
Leia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like there's only going to be one new character on her team, where Jabba got three.
Mm-hmm.
And so what rebel team is getting broken? Like is CLS finally done?
Man, that would be so weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, are we actually going to see CLS like move to the EP Starkiller team?
Oh gosh. I can't even think of that. That would just be so bizarre. Oh man. Okay. Do we want to do the Conquest kit?
Or let's do the Conquest kit. Yeah, let's do the Conquest kit.
Okay. So we're in Conquest right now, so this shouldn't surprise anyone that the character we're playing for is Terran Malakos, who, if you don't know, is from the Cal Kestis video game. He is a dark side attacker, unaligned force user. And I think we all thought maybe he was going to be the Conquest character because his image was leaked in the assets, which I am fairly confident is the first time that has happened with a Conquest character. Maybe Kat.
So there's a concept that the simplest explanation is often the correct explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Someone made a mistake.
Yeah.
They published it early.
Everyone was like, this is the Conquest character. Yeah. This when it happened. And I was like, no, this never happens with Conquest. Like, I know Conquest. And this does not happen with Conquest. Like, they don't do this. It's always the Wednesday before. Like,
yeah.
We hear rumors and all that kind of stuff, but like it's never the asset leaked, and then there it was. Yeah. So anyway, that's it. It was leaked.
Somebody moved the asset from staging to production early,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone probably made fun of them for a few days after that. So
yeah. Oh man. Okay. So So we're playing to unlock him, etc. Let me just scroll through all of these lovely questions and we can get into his kit, which looks pretty interesting. Okay, so his basic is Dark Strike. Deal physical damage to target enemy and gain 2 stacks of Edge of Madness, max 100, until the end of the encounter, which can't be copied, dispelled, or prevented. This attack can't be countered. Edge of Madness is minus 2% defense per stack. So theoretically, you would be at minus 200% defense.
Yep.
When you're maxed. Okay, so special 1, Vile Thrash, cooldown of 3, and it's Zeta. Deal physical damage to target enemy and gain riposte for 2 turns. This attack has plus 30% defense penetration, quadrupled if all allies are dark side or light side unaligned force users. If Malakos has at least 20 stacks of Edge of Madness, he takes a bonus turn. For every 20 stacks of Edge of Madness he has, dispel them and gain a stack of Madness Manifested until the next time he uses Die Whelp, is defeated, or the end of the encounter, which can't be copied, dispelled, or prevented. And if the ally in the leader slot is a dark side or light side online force user, the cooldown of Die Whelp is reset. Oof. Okay. Madness Manifested is minus 40% tenacity per stack. The next time this character uses Die Whelp, it deals 50% more physical damage per stack, reduces the current max health of the target enemy by 15% for the rest of the battle, stacking, excluding raid bosses and galactic legends, which can't be resisted, and removes all stacks of Madness Manifested. That's a mouthful.
This is so complex.
It's so complex. Okay, so his second special is the Die Whelp special they're talking about. Yeah. Cooldown of 6 and an Omicron. By the way, the animation for this is just so awesome. So deal physical damage and inflict vulnerable to all enemies and stun target enemy for 1 turn. If the target had defense down, the stun can't be resisted. If the target enemy is in the leader slot, increase their cooldowns by 1, which can't be resisted. While in Grand Arena, deal additional true damage to all enemies and inflict buff immunity and healing immunity on target enemy for 2 turns, which can't be resisted. If the ally in the leader slot is a dark side or light side unaligned force user, Malakos gains 20% crit damage and offense stacking until the end of the battle. Okay. AoE though on that and AoE vulnerable is pretty awesome.
AoE vulnerable to me feels like that will be a conquest feat in the next conquest set, because there's enough characters that you can do it one at a time, or if you have Malakos, you just get to do it. You get to apply 5 at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. Okay, so his first unique is Echo of the Fallen Order. It's a Zeta and an Omicron. All allies have plus 30% crit chance. If all allies were unaligned force users at the start of the battle, when Malakos has at least 1 stack of Edge of Madness, whenever he scores a critical hit, all other allies gain 5% crit damage and offense stacking until the end of the encounter. Whenever an ally is inflicted with healing immunity, they dispel it and gain damage immunity for 1 turn. Whenever they are inflicted with stun, they dispel it and recover 30% health and protection. That's not even the Omicron, by the way. The Omicron in Grand Arena. Enemies defeated by allies can't be revived. This effect persists if Malakos is defeated. Which is fantastic, because the rule of thumb with uniques is kill the character and the unique goes away.
Yeah.
The first time another dark side or light side unaligned force user ally would be reduced to 1% health. If Malakos is active, they recover 100% health and protection, gain damage immunity for 1 turn, take a bonus turn, and gain critical chance up, critical damage up, and offense up for 2 turns. When Malakos is active, whenever an enemy with less than 100% turn meter gains bonus turn meter, Malakos gains a stack of Edge of Madness, and that enemy takes true damage, which can't be evaded, limit once per turn. And this damage can't defeat enemies. Whew. I am curious, though, about this gaining damage immunity And then taking a bonus turn, because would that get rid of your damage immunity if you take a bonus turn? I guess it wouldn't, because it's a bonus turn. It's not. Yeah.
So right? does this just kill Jabba?
Oh, man, it sounds like it will.
So Kersantan doesn't come back.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye, Wookiee.
Yeah.
There's a ton of, well, no, because there's no turn meter gain on that team, though, because Jabba stops turn meter gain. Well, no. How?
I can't remember.
So but Jabba stops you from getting bonus turn meter. Yeah, I don't. I think the other piece is you going through this that I picked up on. So we're going to give you a stacking critical damage mechanic.
Yeah.
And then we're going to give you an opportunity to always land a critical hit.
Correct. Because the AoE vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah. He has a second unique with another Omicron. So three Omicrons. Strength is power, Zeta and Omicron. Malakos's attacks can't be evaded. Enemies defeated by him can't be revived. He has 75% counter chance and 100% health steal. And at the start of battle, he gains 25% offense for each other dark side or light side unaligned force user. If the ally in the leader slot is an unaligned force user, Malakos ignores taunt. So he also goes around Chrysanthemum.
Yep. So you can just take out Boosh and just come back and deal with, awesome.
That's great. You can call it a day after that.
Yep.
While debuffed, he gains 50% health steal, so he could be at 150. Whenever Malakos uses an ability during his turn, if he has accuracy up or defense up, he immediately uses Dark Strike. Whenever he attacks out of turn, he gains 10% crit damage, stacking for 3 turns. Whenever he's inflicted with daze, he dispels it and reduces his cooldowns by 1. Whenever an enemy dispels a debuff Malakos inflicted from one of his abilities, he gains a stack of Edge of Madness until the end of the encounter. The Omicron. At the start of the battle, Malakos gains a stack of Edge of Madness until the end of the encounter, and all unaligned force users gain critical hit immunity for 2 turns, which can't be dispelled. He has plus 100% max health and plus 50% mastery. Whenever he uses an ability during his turn, he immediately uses Dark Strike. Whenever he attacks out of turn, he gains protection up 20% stacking for 1 turn. Whenever any other unaligned force user ally uses a special ability, Malakos assists. just to really rub the salt in the wound there. And Dark Strike, in case you forgot, after that novel, is his basic, which is where he's gaining 2 stacks of Edge of Madness. So he's going to be gaining that pretty quickly.
So the clarification on Jabba the Hutt, because there's a weird nuance to this. If Jabba the Hutt is not in the leader slot, allies can't gain bonus turn meter. That was the bonus turn meter piece I was having. It's right. Master Kenobi that stops bonus turn meter. But if Jabba is in the allied leader slot, whenever an enemy with less than 100% turn meter gains bonus turn meter, Hutt Cartel gains 7% turn meter limit once per turn. So if this team gains bonus turn meter, the Hutt team gains bonus turn meter, which
means
then that triggers his unique 2.
Right.
Which, and I, there's so much in here, I'm having a hard time finding where that is.
I know, I just lost it too. It's the Omicron in his unique 1. Whenever an enemy gains bonus turn meter, he gains a stack of Edge of Madness, and that enemy takes true damage.
Yeah. So, all right. Someone on your team gains bonus turn meter. The Hutt team, they all gain bonus turn meter. He gets a stack of Edge of Madness, and they all take true, the entire team takes true damage.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So you're probably going to run him under a Seer leadership.
Yep, 100%.
Seer leadership. All other unaligned force user allies gain 5% turn meter whenever another unaligned force user ally takes damage from an enemy. So you hit them, they get turn meter. which means Java gets turn meter, which means you get true damage.
Yeah.
This is like the most monkey see, monkey do kind of nonsense.
I have a huge problem with this kit.
Okay.
And it's not the kit itself. It's that there are so many characters with like heal immunity now that you don't really even think like they're the big, like we all know that Rey will put undispellable heal immunity on a character. Like, and that's why you bring her in a lot of those cases to use it. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of characters with heal immunity. There's a ton of characters that just randomly put days on things that aren't kind of your days team that you use in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be dropping these things on there and like, what just happened? Like, oh, I randomly forgot this character. Anakin is a great example of that. Giant Anakin. So, oh, you're going to go take in your Qui-Gon Jinn team to take them out. Oh, Anakin put heal block on somebody. All of a sudden they all got damage immunity and now you can't slap them all when they kill Quiet. You know, it's little things like that through all those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in this kit about does not work if there is a Galactic Legend present.
Yeah, there isn't. You're absolutely right. So it's it's gonna be real interesting once we unlock him in two-ish months.
So Seer, Cal, ATF,
mm-hmm.
and a tank probably.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to want a full unaligned force user squad with him for sure. And I don't see why you wouldn't run him under Seer lead.
Yeah.
But Cal, ATF, like you said, any of the Inquisitors.
Yeah, and I've tried running ninth with the Seer team, and she just doesn't get taunt enough. But kind of with this kit, I'm almost wondering if it doesn't matter if there's a tank or not, because they've got some of the built-in things where somebody gets hit, like the monkey see monkey do turn meter thing, that which is, by the way, that's what we're going to call that until the end of time.
Yeah,
it's going to be the monkey see monkey do turn meter revolution. You know, the fact that characters are going to go into damage immunity a lot, it kind of sounds like maybe having a tank is really just not going to matter on that team.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely though you're going to go Seer, him, Cal.
Yeah.
And then take your pick, I guess.
Yeah, probably going to be just whatever makes sense. I mean, for all we know, Commander Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Oh man. Man. Yeah, so that is him. I'm just checking in the fact if there's anything that was crazy. But I don't think there is. So yeah, that's it. That's his kit.
Yep.
And we're playing Conquest for him right now.
And everyone should have him because this is not a bad Conquest.
No, I mean, so far, so like even the feats that I thought would not be doable have been doable. So like even that Phoenix feat is doable.
I have been surprised at how tanky a Gear 11 Rex really is.
Yeah.
He finally died in 3 days for me. He's done 15 fights and he died for the first time.
And he's gear 11 for you.
And he's gear 11.
Man. Yeah. So, it's a pretty good run so far.
And I'm not running him with Phoenix, so he's not getting all of the extra Phoenix shenanigans around health and protection. I'm using him as the fifth in a 501st clones team so I can knock those out as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. I put him with Phoenix and just to do that fight, which by the way, my Rex is gear 10.
Okay.
And my Phoenix is gear 11, except for Hera. And it is hilarious just to watch them all attack. It's like a swarm on the enemy. And then you're like, oh, goodbye, Wrecker. Okay. Bye, Echo. it's just amusing. Anyway, we have another kit, which is for Princess Nisa, who strangely looks a lot like my dog did one year on Halloween.
So I have an interesting Princess Nisa kind of thing that came up yesterday. My daughter is currently watching Casey Dangerous,
okay,
which was a Disney show starring Zendaya from about 6 or 7 years ago. And I'll be honest, I am a sucker for, like, you know, preteen, mid-teen, like, TV shows. I love those things. So I've been watching it with her. And her father, we're gonna play like the 7 degrees of separation thing. So her father is Kareem Hardison.
Okay.
Who, if you don't remember Kareem, and Kareem was, and I know it wasn't Dwayne Wade, but it was Dwayne Wayne, I think was his name, from A Different World, which was the Cosby Show spinoff starring Lisa Bonet when they were all in college.
Okay, yeah.
So he was the guy with the round glasses, the like the flip-up sunglasses. It's a cool show. I watched it all the time. So he's the dad. They're spies. There might be some spoilers here. In one of the episode chains, they find his wife's sister,
okay,
who was working for the evil spy organization.
Naturally.
And it was, now I'm drawing a blank on her name, but it was Whitney from A Different World, who Kareem Hardison dated on the show. And it was cool because, like, it was, you got to see him on the screen together for the first time. So I'm looking this up, and I looked up the show, and I was looking at the cast, and one of the characters, the actress was a woman by the name of Cree Summers.
Okay.
And she's one of those, like, oh, you look really familiar, and I wanted to see what else she did. She was the voice of Princess Nisa on the Ewoks show. And it was just funny, as I was looking all this up last night, like, kind of came together, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's a weird way that kind of everything kind of coordinates and twists together from that side. So,
man.
And my daughter in the other room just texted me, are you talking about my show? Like, she didn't really hear me talking about this right now. So it's kind of funny from that side. So again, now you have a history in, like, weird Disney shows where it all ties together from that side. So let's talk about the princess. The image is great. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think they do this cool job of drawing this cute little Ewok. And then you notice in her hand is just this knife that she is ready to murder you in the face with.
It's kind of terrifying.
It is. It's the 80s were crazy that they used those things to try and get kids to buy toys, and they would eat your face off.
Yeah, like, it's not cute and cuddly.
Yes, it is not. So... Yeah. Let's jump into her kit. She is the Ewok turd polisher. I think any of the other descriptive pieces, but she is going to bring balance to the Ewoks. Her basic is Rock Sling. Deal physical damage to the target enemy. For each critical hit scored, Nisa attacks again, max 2 times. When she attacks again this way, she is immune to bonus turn meter gains. Because there's some kit interaction with Ewoks on bonuses that they get bonus turn meter off of basics.
Right.
So, special one, Danger Ewoks. Wait, this should be Danger Ewoks, right? Not Dangar Ewoks.
I don't know. Should be, right?
I think. Let's take a look in the game.
Do we need to Google Dangar?
Yeah, maybe that was... I never watched this show, so... No, it is called Dangar Ewoks. I wonder if she's got a weird voice thing.
A weird voice.
Now we're gonna have to watch this show. So this is Dangar Ewoks, a cooldown of 3. Final text: dispel all debuffs on all Ewok allies. Call target Ewok ally to assist and deal physical damage to target enemy and inflict speed down for 2 turns. All Ewok allies gain critical chance up for 2 turns and recover 10% health.
Okay.
So, annoying Ewok things of calling someone to assist, generating turn meter, and healing off of it, where they get 1,000 turns and I don't, and I hate them. So, special two, Yub Nub cooldown. This is a Zeta. This is the only Zeta, so this is a 1 Zeta character, which I appreciate. Deal physical damage to all enemies, stun target enemy for one turn, and remove 100% turn meter. And Ooh. Princess Nisa gains critical damage up for two turns.
Okay.
So, pretty basic kit so far. Unique one, Bright Tree Village, which is an Omicron. Final text. Nisa has 20% critical chance, 50% defense and max health, and 40% tenacity. Other Ewok allies gain 15% defense and 20% max health and potency. So there's the turn polish. Okay. Whenever an Ewok ally attacks out of turn, inflict a stack of damage over time to target enemy for Ooh. One turn. So that kind of adds up.
Yeah.
Whenever another Ewok ally attacks out of turn, they deal true damage. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
So Chirpa just called wow. everyone to assist, and that was 5 damage over times and 5 true damages.
Yikes.
Whenever another Ewok ally uses a special ability, Nisa assists. That's okay. pretty nice as well. So whenever an enemy attacks an ally, Nisa gains retribution for one turn, 5% turn meter, and all Ewok allies recover 5% health.
Okay.
All right. So, you keep hitting Peplu, she's going to get retribution, and he's going to heal. Whenever an Ewok ally is dazed or stunned, they get foresight, protection up 100% for two turns, and all Ewok allies gain 50% defense stacking for the rest of the encounter. Yes. You know, we're going to now see... She's going to get added to the Ewok teams in Conquest, so you can't just
or
stun them and kill them all.
I know.
Garbage. Garbage. Whenever an Ewok ally is critically hit, they gain 5% offense stacking until the end of their turn.
Oh my god.
So that's just the unique. Like that's where all of the turn polishing comes in.
And that's not even the Omicron.
Yes. And now the Omicron, which is in Territory Wars. Which, I'll be honest, I don't see our officers allowing anyone to use this, even if it's good or not, just because the thought of bringing Ewoks into Territory Wars probably scares most people to death.
Yeah. I mean, it should. They're murder bears.
Yes. Nisa has 95% critical chance, 25% critical damage, and 10% max health, and 10 speed for each other Ewok ally, and is immune to daze and stun. At the start of battle, she gains critical chance up and critical damage up for two turns and 100% turn meter. She goes first. Allied Ewoks gain 10% offense.
Wow.
Whenever an Ewok ally gains a buff, Princess Nisa recovers 10% health protection. They're a butt-heavy team.
Yeah.
Whenever an Ewok ally is inflicted with a debuff, they recover 10% health and gain 5% turn meter. Whenever an Ewok ally assists, reduce the target enemy's critical damage by 5% stacking for 3 turns. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever Nisa attacks, her cooldowns are reduced by 1.
Ooh.
So
would that include like her assisting? Like, because she's attacking, right?
That would be my guess, yes.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that 4-turn cooldown where she deals physical damage to all enemies, stuns for one turn, and removes 100% turn meter, that kind of feels like you just roll that through all of the characters.
Yeah, it really does.
So that is Princess Nisa. The kit was great, like easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Oh, I now need advanced mathematics to actually understand what's going on outside of Ewoks are doing crazy stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
So, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Like, I don't think we're going to see him in Territory Wars. I think that's a lot of work to put into a team when you don't need a lot of teams in Territory Wars as it is.
It's just going to be interesting, though, because we're going to have her at Relic 7.
Yep. Yeah. I guess a lot of it's going to come down to is how many of the other Ewoks are going to be needed at Relic mm-hmm. that you can move them into a direction where it matters.
Right. And who do you take out of the squad?
Right. Yeah.
Is my other thought. But that's a future problem that
you
may never need to actually encounter.
I will let someone else bring her all the way up to 7 stars and do testing and tell me what works or not.
Right.
Because I can't seem to figure out that team. You put them in, you turn on auto, and you see what happens. That's kind of the way that I look at it. Except for like the weird folks that are just have been so into Ewoks and have been swearing by them forever.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a number of them out there. I appreciate that they do awesome things for you, but no. They were painful to take to Relics because I had that stupid project, and we'll figure it out from there. So.
Okay, but we got through all the news.
We did. That was there was a lot in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot. That was heavy.
So I think we hit That's No Moon. I mean, we mm-hmm. kind of got through the road ahead.
Yep.
So now generally positive, but let's take this pivot.
Okay.
Kind of, what's the banter in the room? What's the downfall to kind of all of this awesome stuff that they announced?
Man. Oh, so like I feel like we just have to talk about the fact that they announced a new raid already.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to give your point on this first and then I can counter it. And I'm not gonna counter it. I don't want to say counter it like I'm gonna disagree with you, but I would like to give a perspective. I think that
I'll take mine and look, I am genuinely positive about the new raid
mm-hmm.
because I want to mix things up but I also understand that I'm in a position that I can pivot to the new raid probably easier than most.
Right.
What frustrates me about the last week is the community can't seem to figure out what side of this argument we want to be on. Because mm-hmm. on one hand, all we hear about is how everyone is burned out doing the crate raid twice a week and no one wants to. We're likely going to see about a $20 million or 20 million point reduction in our crate raid score. Or we did see about a 20 million point reduction in our crate raid score between the last run and this run. Like, I think people are getting burned out on the crate raid. And we're hearing like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then a new raid comes out or there's an announcement of a new raid. And then it's, you're not respecting my opinion. And I don't want to move away from crate. So are we tired of the crate raid? Or are we not tired of the crate raid? Like, can someone just tell me what side of the fence we're going to be on? Mm-hmm. And then I'm happy to kind of get my pitchfork out and run from that side. That's my only piece. Like I'll leave it at that. We just can't argue both sides just because we want to be argued. We want to be.
Angry, yeah.
The way that I look at it.
I totally see that point. I think for me personally, I'm tired of the raid in general being on all the time. It's always on.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hoping we would see a change with that because they even did like that little survey about the raid cadence and how many times do you hit it and like, how many times does it launch? Like all that, whatever. How much time do you spend in the raid? Like all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. They're listening. And then they're like, we're giving you a new raid. I'm like, this is just another raid for me to get tired of.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be the same cadence, unless it's not. Like maybe they're going to take what happened with crate and tweak it a little bit for this one. That would be great. But like that's just where I'm looking at it from. Like, oh, okay. I'm not frustrated in terms of like, oh, it's a new raid already. Because so I think what people would like is one, the constantly being launched thing to kind of go away. I think it would be great if it was the same amount of tickets required to launch and just have it run for 2 days instead of 3 days. And then that way we get an off day kind of built in.
Yep.
Because right now it's 90,000 tickets to launch. It runs for 3 days. Guess what? We get 90,000 tickets in 3 days. So we're permanently stuck in a launched loop here thing. Whereas if it's 90,000 tickets to launch and it runs for 2 days, eventually we're going to outrun those tickets. Right. and have to rebuild. Anyway, doesn't matter. The other thing, though, I think people would like is just to know, are we looking at a 6-month shelf life for raids? Because the crate raid came out at the beginning of May.
Yep.
And if this one comes out November, December, we're looking around 6-ish months, 6 to 7 months. Is that realistic? Or is it just kind of offset this way because they're trying to make the match Galactic Legends like we talked about earlier, yep. In which case would it shift to once a year? Like, what's the kind of cadence we're looking at? Because I do think that churning them out every 6 months is a way to burn players out.
It's a way to burn developers out too.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's a good point. The only thing that this raid, I shouldn't say the only thing, but the thing that I've noticed with this raid, and we've already talked about it, is a lot of the requirements are required elsewhere.
Yep.
It's not like they're like, hey, take your crappy Jawas,
yeah,
and do nothing with them because they're useless. You know what I mean? Like, at least the characters that we do have to use already have other purposes and are already reliced, or you are planning to relic them anyway for Profundity, yeah, or Luke or whoever, right? So that's kind of a silver lining. But yeah.
And when you look at crate, I mean, like put the Jawas to the side. You really had two teams that a lot of people were trying to build up for this, and the Tuskens and Jabba, because they were both really good from that. Mm-hmm. There are a number of characters on the Endor raid,
mm-hmm,
that most players, and I know not everybody, and I know that there's people at different levels, but most people that have been playing for 4 years, for half of the life cycle of this game, are going to have them at minimum at 7 stars where they sit today. It's not like they're releasing a number of new teams, dropping, although Drogon probably, or Dragon, or Drago, whatever his name is, will probably end up falling in that list as well. You know, this is where, you know, I like the idea that CG seems to be releasing game modes for characters, or telling you, like, do this because we're also going to give, yeah, you, like, this payoff where it sits. I fundamentally think this is a hard concept for a lot of the community to wrap their head around. But sometimes you need to look at what I'm doing today, but what do I need to do tomorrow and start planning for that? And I think for a lot of people is that if you spend the next 6 months bringing those characters up so that you can get there earlier,
mm-hmm,
I think that it makes that transition a little, like, I think it's better that they're telling us 6 months ahead of time that, yeah, we're going to make this shift, because it's allowing people to make a decision with their resources right now.
Do you plan for what's coming, or do you, yep, try to catch up now?
Yeah. Like, think about the uproar if it would have been the next, if they would have waited, like they released Leia in 3 months, and, you know, in September, and they're like, you know, oh, by the way, we're going to have a raid for her in 2 months coming up.
Right.
That would have a lot of people upset, because that's a lot of resources that they spent during that window. They're giving you enough information now to start making a decision of what makes the most sense for me moving forward.
Well, and actually, that's a really good point, because even when Jabba was announced, they didn't say explicitly what we would use him for, but they, yeah, did say we were going to be using him in game modes.
Yep. Yeah.
So this is just much more clear cut.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, I completely understand where folks are frustrated with the raid change announcement, and and again, far be it for me to tell someone they're wrong on how they feel on those things. I'm genuinely excited for the raid. I think it's going to be kind of cool. I think doing something different. I wonder if they could fix the raid frequency problem by doubling the tickets,
mm-hmm,
running it once, and doubling the rewards.
Yes.
Because, yes, it's interesting. I think we've missed tickets once since the raid came up. And, mm-hmm, someone made a comment like, great, now we're gonna miss the raid. The yeah, reality is that you're, no, typically so ticket flush when it released. Like, I think it's gonna be like 7 months at the current cadence before it kind of circles all the way around to like, oh, we finally missed it. It wasn't like when you were running the pit raid and someone fell short by 100 points. Like within the next 10 days, you were gonna fall short from that standpoint.
Right.
So,
and like you have to keep missing tickets to miss it now.
Yes.
And, yeah. I think it's just the cadence. Like, I got tagged yesterday by Hotbot because I hadn't hit the raid, and it was like raid ends in 23 hours, and I remember I looked at my phone and I was like, I just fucking hit this thing. Yeah, like, what do you mean it ends in 23 hours? I just did this. I love that idea. Double the reward payout, double the tickets, run it once for the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Because then we're going to be guaranteed to have an off day.
And there literally is enough to do in the game.
Yes.
That we're never really at a point that it's like, oh, what am I supposed to do today?
Right.
Like it's okay that you know, we'll miss from, you know, again, I would prefer not to do it in the weekend. I would actually prefer to do it in the week because I think on the weekends I tend to do less in the game. But I think there's a way that you can kind of make that happen. Or I don't know, even actually, I think doubling the tickets and leaving it open for 6 days is actually worse, because I think that the longer the raid is, the more you put it off and you put it off and you put it off, and then you'll find out people that won't hit it. But I just think it's okay just not to do something for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So
just what I would do, I would double the tickets, double the rewards, but leave it at 3 days for running.
Yep. And still like pin it to 5 teams. You know, I don't need, you know, don't, that also doesn't mean like double the number of teams, because also that means double the number of points.
Right.
No, just leave it. I got to post 5 times. Just give me the same reward structure in that. Like I need 60 donuts worth of rewards in a week to keep pace with relics. However they want to go about doing that, as long as it kind of lessens the amount of time that I have to hit something, I'm on board with. So.
Yep. So we'll see. Maybe they're going to take all of this into account for the new one.
Yep. We'll see. CG call us. We got ideas.
Yeah, man. We have so many good ideas for them. okay. So let's be positive. Let's go to I Love You, I Know, and talk about what we're currently loving in the game right now, because we don't want to be jaded.
Yep.
So Pico, what are you liking?
So 2 years into Conquest, I actually planned it for the first time.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying it. And it's honestly because of the change that they made to simming, because the way that I had kind of always done it in the past is I had this big long list of characters in a loadout that I could just, like, if I needed something, I could go in and select it where I needed it. Because then I would use that. My tab is called Cron Farm, and that was what I would use to farm Datacrons.
Right.
For the other week out of that. Well, because I don't need that anymore. I'm like, no. I'm just going to build specific teams to knock out feats. And I'm right now for Conquest, I am trying to complete one sector a day. Feats and all. I did not leave Sector 1 on Monday. I didn't even go into Sector. I think I went in just far enough to get the disc off of the node.
Yeah.
When I got to the end, but I finished Sector 1 on day 1. I finished Sector 2 on day 2. I finished Sector 3 minus the geo feet, because there just weren't enough of them. Tomorrow I'll go into 4, and I'll focus on 4, and then on Friday I'll get to 5 from that side, and then I'll do cleanup.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting down the day before, because I know I'm going into Section 4, and I'm building up my teams that I'm going to use, and I'm all set. And it's really kind of cool going about it from that side.
It's fantastic. So. Man, I love planning
it
Conquest.
It just took me 2 years to kind of come to the same point that everyone else had already come to by now. So.
Hey, whatever works.
Yeah.
but this is actually a really good point, because they introduced the sim button in Conquest for the Datacron nodes, and it really is going to change how people play the mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, that's exactly it, because now you don't need to have teams that you can just throw. Because even for me, like, I would go in and I'd be like, oh, well, I'll just do this on the Datacron node because, you know, if it was like win 40 battles with unaligned force users, I'm like, okay, I'll just use my Inquisitors on the Datacron node, not nonstop. And it's like, well, now I don't necessarily have to do that.
Yep.
So, fantastic.
I'm also focusing a little bit more on trying to get through the board with teams to close feats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so as you're saying, like kind of get to the treasure node and do all of them on the treasure node. Like I'm trying to actually close as many feats out as I get towards the end of it there, yep. So that I can kind of minimize where that's at. So
yeah, today, so you're not going back and cleaning up.
Yeah. I did have to burn 200, a refresh at 200, because I was trying some teams to kind of figure out how some things worked. And it just, like, part of this is because I can't just brute force my way to the end. I'm having to figure some things out, and I just wanted to kind of keep pace with where I'm at. But mm-hmm. next month I'm going to be all set. Like my plan will be locked and loaded into next month. And I also won't, like, at day four next month go like, how did I do that one again? So I've got everything kind of pinned down and ready to go from that side. So
yeah, that's always the first month of a conquest run, though. We're figuring everything out. And then month two, we're like, oh, we know what we're doing. And month three, we're like, give us something new.
So what about yourself?
I'm in a weird spot because, so like, the Leviathan requirements are done. I've got Jedi Cal. I know I toyed with not getting him. I think that's what we talked about last time.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to get him. I was just going to miss him because he was coming too quickly and it was whatever. And then I just kind of looked at it and I looked at the packs and then I looked at what I actually needed shard wise. And I was like, like, it's actually not that bad. And yeah, so I ended up getting Jedi Cal. He's relic. I think he's at relic 6 now.
Okay.
Because again, signal data, 17 green things.
Yep.
So I'm very excited to try that Cal Seer mission next TV, because that's my goal. But now I'm like, I was going to invest in my Mandos, and now I'm like, I think I'm just in like this really weird holding pattern.
Yeah.
Which feels kind of good. I'm like, oh. And like, I'm looking at my roster now too, because of the rewards from the crate rate and stuff. I'm like, ah, oh, I'm like, I can take you to relics too. And I can do like, oh, I'm like, there's so many things here that I can do. I'm like, or I can like stay focused. I'm like, but also I'm looking at the new raid requirements, and almost all of them except for the Ewoks are at relics already. Yep. So I'm fine there. So I'm like, I just really have to look at the Galactic Legend requirements now, which is a great feeling.
It almost feels like, and I'm tearing a page out of your book right now, is that I'm just pre-farming all of the gear that I need for those characters and the relic material and just kind of stashing it away from a period of time. But it's almost like you're going to be like extra prepared when it comes time to get there and start unlocking the things you need from that side.
Yeah. So it's a weird feeling, but I'm really excited to try the Cal mission. We had really good success with it actually yesterday, today, whatever day it was that we ran that mission. So I think we're going to be pushing for that to get to Zepho, since you don't need Jedi Cal for it specifically. But yeah.
Yeah, I did not get a chance to try that mission. Life kind of blew up for me over the last 24 hours. And when I looked, we'd only had like 10 or 11 people try it.
Yeah.
So I just decided, like, if I missed it, it wasn't going to push us over the edge. So no. I'll come back in 2 weeks and give it another chance at that side. So
this was the let's try and see if the strategy is actually repeatable, which it seems to be.
Yeah.
Which is great. So now we just need to know. I believe Maw, only one guild got to Zepho.
Okay.
So now it's just a matter of, are they going to are they going to max rewards right away on it? Or are they going to find out if the first chest and second chest don't count as stars? Yeah. Which, hopefully they will find that out for the rest of us, but who knows?
My guess would be they're going to wait till us plebes that actually can't get to 3 stars figure it out from that side, because, you know.
It's fine.
As would I. If I had the resources, I would try hard as well. So it's let's be completely fair.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would be calling everyone else plebes as well. So that's exactly what it is.
Oh, 100%. Okay. Are we going to do one last rank and file?
Let's do one last rank and file.
Well, not one last, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, Leviathan comes in 2 weeks, and we've been kind of talking about it over the past couple of weeks of taking a look at it one last time.
Yeah.
And I pulled the statistics up. So right now we're at 61% of the first place teams are the Profundity.
Yeah.
36% are Executors. And about 2% are the Executrix in that case, and then kind of 1% down the line. Rank one squads, oddly enough, there are, this is actually great. So 61% or the exact number of first place Profundity teams are the exact same lineup, starting lineup.
Yeah.
So not a lot of flexibility there. Of the Executor fleets, we've got 1% of the triple attacker. Everything else is kind of the standard, Houndstooth lead.
Right.
But what was super interesting, it was actually interesting to come take a look at this, is the most common reinforcement is the ghost.
Yeah.
In 54% of cases, in 54%, I guess, usage of coming in as the first ship is the ghost, followed by Cassian's U-Wing, and then the Phantom II. And why that's interesting is the Phantom II's reinforcement bonus reduces the capital ship's cooldown on reinforcement by one.
So you can do it again.
So the order should be, and there's actually a bonus on the Profundity for doing that if you call ships on back-to-back. So the order should be Phantom and then Ghost. But there's a bunch of big brains out there that are calling in the Ghost first, and I just can't seem to figure it out.
Me neither.
Like, it's not even a Profundity thing. Even if you're an early game and you're using a weird Phoenix fleet, like it used to be like the Thrawn and the Phoenix teams and those pieces together, you should always be, if you have the Phantom should always come in first to get your fifth ship out on the board faster than everyone else. So I need someone to explain this to me.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, I just can't wrap my head around it.
You know who probably gets it is Savitar.
Absolutely, yeah.
He can explain it to us.
Tomorrow about midday, we'll get a note on the Discord servers like, yeah, hey, dummy, this is why. And then I will become enlightened and move one step closer to Nirvana. So, yeah. I don't know. It just, know. It hurts my head. So,
yeah.
So that is the last, rank and file.
Man, I'm so curious to see how this shifts.
I will also, this is dangerous to talk about my shard on the podcast because I don't know who listened to it, but we had someone take over an account a few months back, and they wanted to check with where everyone's payouts were, and the shard was like, yeah, okay, man, whatever. Like, people just do their fight. Well, he got hit during his payout window Sunday, and it was like explosion from like 2 years ago. What are you doing? Understand what my payout is. Like, and the guy did it, who's a phenomenally nice guy. It's just like, is there a reward in this game mode that I'm not aware of any longer? So, but it was just like, man, I do not miss that at all.
Wait, like regular squad arena or
regular squad arena, just good old fashioned. Like,
there's not even crystals there anymore.
There's not. There's outside of, I want to see a straight line on SWGOH.GG, there is no advantage to finishing in first place.
Wow.
Like, I am in the, I go in for my daily squad arena fight every day.
Yeah.
I start it, then I hit forfeit.
Me too.
And I'm just done. Like, it's
me too.
If I fall to the top 20, I'll fight my way back into the top 20, but.
And oh, I don't even do that. I'm way down. Like, I'm near the 200s now.
And now, because you can get so much gold out of the Mark One raid crystals, like, I don't even worry about getting the currency any longer so that I can buy credits with it from that side. So, yeah, it was just it was like this little blow up. And I'm like, oh, this is just bad.
Ugh, no,
so glad that's over.
Ugh. Yeah, hard pass. Hard pass on that. Okay. Do we want to go to Uncle Owen's moisture farm?
Sure. So, and last but not least, let's head to Uncle Owen's Moisture Farm to talk about who and what we are currently farming in game, because everyone knows that work comes before going to Tashi Station to pick up power converters. I almost said Taki Station because my kids are eating those hot garbage Taki things these days. That's just gross. But all right. So, where are you at? I know we just talked about this a second ago, but.
Yeah, so I just got Seer to Relic 3
Okay.
because, again, signal data. So Jedicalus go to Relic 7, and then she obviously needs to go to Relic 7. I have three characters left to farm, so I'm farming Zori, whichever Tusk, I think it's Tusken Chieftain that's on the
Yep.
hard nodes because I put him on the back burner for a while. And BT1. Poor BT1 has been on the back burner for so long. But then all the characters will be farmed. There'll be seven stars. And they're all like pretty decently close to seven star.
Sure.
I think BT needs like 30 shards and the Tusken needs like four.
Okay.
So they're all relatively close. So now I guess I just focus on the Leia requirements. I don't know. Like I genuinely am just like, I don't know what to do right now. What do I do with myself?
It's a weird place to be.
I actually think like I am going to focus on the Leia requirements, but I think that I can also like squeeze in some side projects. So like I never took my Jahani to relic. She's gear
Okay.
12 still. I'm like I could relic you.
So, how much of your roster is not at gear 12 right now?
Probably a good chunk. Like yeah, but that's a great point. I could
Yeah.
bring the characters up to gear 12.
Not that you need a not
Especially.
to, that you need a random project associated with it, but you know, that's like always a good downtime type activity type thing.
Well, no, but this is actually a really good point because a lot of the older characters don't require
Yeah.
Kairos.
Yep.
And that is the crunch. So, like, when I was looking at the Phoenix squad to figure out the Phoenix feat for Conquest, I was like, oh, how am I going to get them to survive? And I was looking at my Phoenix, and like, some of them were gear 9
Yeah.
and all. And I was like, I can take you guys up because you guys don't need Kairos.
Yeah.
It was like this beautiful moment of like, I can just use all of this gear. And I just kept clicking buttons. And I'm like,
Yeah.
man, I was like, I'm nowhere near running out of this stuff.
Like, oh, three stun guns at a level? Sure.
Yeah, no
Five Carbonis,
problem.
done. I'm good. Knock it out. Yeah.
Yeah, so I could totally do that. That's a great idea.
And all that does is it just makes it when the next set of requirements for something comes out, you're just that much closer to kind of being there for those things where it,
Yeah. Oh, I like that idea a lot more. Because like the newer characters, I'm like, okay, I can do it and I can
yeah.
get the gear, but then I'm like, it's the Cairo, like that's what slowed me down on Seer. I was like, oh, I just spent her Cairo on somebody
Yeah,
else.
yeah.
So yeah, it's the Kairos that suck, but I like that idea. Maybe I'll
And
do my
then
Phoenix first.
when you get everyone up to 12, all of a sudden you realize like I'm starting to put stun gun salvage and Carbontes into relic salvage, and that feels really wrong, but also it's what I have the most of, so I might as well spend
Yeah, well, I needed
it.
some relic material the other day, and I was like, I guess I'm gonna like use my stun guns here, because I had 2,000 of them, and I'm like, I can just go buy them again, so it's fine. But like, and I didn't use that many, but still, that's a good idea. I like that plan. Okay, I'm gonna do that.
I have another idea. Let's build a time machine and we'll go back 3 years and tell 3 years ago, Sarah, you're gonna have 2,000 stun guns and not know what to do with it, just to see what your reaction is. Then we go back and that
Oh
would
man. What are you working on?
So the new 52 is down to two characters. So
Just
the
two.
just two. The Ewoks got done. And I'll freely admit I got a little burned out working on all of them. So I dropped a little bit of crystals to make that happen, to kind of make the salvage or to make the signal data happen. And then quickly knocked out Visus and the two remaining Night Sisters. So now it's the order is Cup, and then Ugnaught is going to be the last one to go through.
Poor Ugnaught.
But I will easily be done before the next episode.
Yeah.
Well, because the next episode we're gonna miss in 2 weeks. Spoiler alert.
Right.
But I will likely be done before I leave for vacation next Saturday. Like I'll have them, the project will be done and everyone will be R7 at that point. So yeah. Other than that, I'm starting to use the hot utils and SW GOH events tool to start pre-farming Rex and Nisa and getting their gear. I have decided I will get Leia when she comes out, but I'm going to delay going after shards as long as I possibly can. And I'm trying to do as much as I can coming off of nodes and then just kind of use crystals to fill in the gap. If they release, like, I don't know, the last character, and it goes farmable right when she wrote,
right.
When the Galactic Legend is released. So I personally think I got burned on the last couple of Journey Guide characters getting a little bit too far ahead of it and probably cost myself more than I need or do from that side. So I'm trying to have a little bit of willpower and not run it up. Although I really want to get Sexy Rexy up to R8 and use him on that Phoenix mission because I'm tired of losing it. So
yeah. And I think he's going to be the easy button for it.
Yeah. And our old friend Cotman, former friend, is actually still friend of the show, listens to the show. I don't think we see him on Discord much anymore, but he did message me last week and he's like, yeah, I beat the mission and I'm fairly certain it's because he's got Rex already. And so he beat that fucking Phoenix mission. So it sounds like it's easy mode right now. And I need to get back to him because I realized I didn't respond back. But so that's kind of where I am right now. I think the what I'm trying to wrap my head around right now is what's going to be the new rule for characters. Is it going to be just take attackers to 8, tanks to 9,
right,
and support and healers to 7? Or is it bring everyone up to 7 and start figuring out where other things go from that point? But I'm trying to kind of come up with a new Pico rule for characters on that side. I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet.
Yeah, it's a weird state right now.
Yeah. I did look the other day at how many tanks I did not have at R9 and realized there are a whole lot more tanks in the game than what I was really expecting it to be. So
there are a lot.
That is not going to happen. Yeah.
There are a lot. Even just seeing like a few of like the GAC matchups with like the top players and you're like,
yeah,
how do you have that many R9s? Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. But that's fine.
All right.
So we did it.
We did. I mean, there may be some people disappointed by this. We kept it at 2 hours. That's a lot to pack in into a 2 hour episode.
Yeah. Which is fine.
Yeah.
We got it done. So yeah, like you said, spoiler alert, there's no episode in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But we'll be back after that.
Yeah, we'll be back early August coming out of that. Everybody needs a vacation from time to time.
Exactly.
Y'all need a vacation from us.
Yeah. We have to rest our voices.
Yeah. Yes. I can't maintain this distinguished state if I'm talking every 2 weeks. I have to take some time off every once in a while and recharge the cords.
There you go. Okay. So that's it. We've made it through. And I guess we'll see everyone in a few weeks with Leviathan. Maybe there'll be more news.
I would have to imagine.
Right?
I would have to imagine. So
we'll see. But on that note, thank you everybody for joining us this week. That ought to do it. And until next time, Chewie, we're home.